This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to the show. In this program, we're going to do a little bit of science. We're going to have a very special guest in the first segment. In our second segment, we're going to have Jørn Dinn-Hørner and Dr. Tony Held to talk about stuff. And if you enjoyed last week's program on bad music, and we hope you did, we're going to do part two on that with Steve Valentino in our third segment today. Let's start out with some current events in science. The banana is in trouble.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Article off the web. It's one of the world's favorite fruits, but the banana hasn't had sex in years, and its days may be numbered. Without scientific help, the sterile, seedless fruit could disappear within 10 years, according to a Belgian plant pathologist. Emil Friesen, who apparently is the head of the International Network for the Improvement of Banana and Plantain, which is a very powerful organization in Montpellier, France, said the fruit lacks the genetic diversity to fight off disease and pests that are plaguing banana plantations, and only biotechnology and genetic manipulation may be able to save it. Well, UCD is one of the world's foremost agricultural institutions, and we're looking forward to talking in the weeks to come about issues like this, about genetic diversity, how they affect crops. We're also going to discuss a book, which I haven't finished reading yet, titled The Botany of Desire, currently a national bestseller, A Plant's Eye View of the World by Michael Pollan. When I was a student here at UCD, which seems like only yesterday, I took a very interesting class called The Evolution of Crop Plants, which was a great little class explaining how we derived various types of cultivated plants, which we rely upon. I remember my professor saying that it was very strange to him that every child knew what a rhinoceros was at the zoo, but the average American couldn't tell wheat from barley. And, you know, we have to ask, which is more important to you, wheat or a rhinoceros? And I think the answer is clear. This banana story may be premature, but it is true that bananas, like apples, have to be propagated vegetatively. Bananas are a wonderful fruit, but they would be considerably less enjoyable if they had seeds, as wild bananas do. You don't want to bite into a banana and put your teeth into some very hard, stone-like seeds. So when they discovered a banana hybrid, actually, interestingly, bananas, this is a great little bit of trivia, bananas are triploid. They have three times the genetic material. Now, you and I, most of our cells have two copies of the DNA, excepting for sperm and egg cells, which have only one copy, which is why they reunite to form, two copies each. Bananas have three copies of information, which makes it very hard for them to reproduce sexually, because how do you divide up that third set of chromosomes? Bit of a problem. Man has solved this problem by simply chopping off the stalks and moving them around, replanting them. But this does reduce genetic variability, and, you know, hopefully it will not threaten our banana, you know, one of the world's favorite fruits. Now, we mentioned on last week's program Ken Burns, one of America's really treasures, a man who's producing outstanding documentaries that really make you think. I really hope that he prospers and can make documentaries for the next, 30 or 40 years. Another guy that I admire equally much, sadly, is no longer with us. Isaac Asimov, the noted science and science fiction writer, passed away now. I guess it's going on 11 years. I snagged a copy of one of his books, Frontiers 2, one of the last things that he wrote in conjunction with his wife, Janet, that, as always, manages to take something curious and in a very simple way of writing about it and thinking about it, make it just absolutely fascinating. Another book I had before this was called Asimov on Astronomy, and I thought of this book and pulled it down off the shelf when I saw a story on the web about an exploding star that may put on a show. Asimov and others had written some essays speculating on where the next supernova might appear in the sky. They happen about 3 per millennium, we think, in a given galaxy. And here in the Milky Way, we've had 3 in the last 1,000 years. And the thought is, well, geez, wouldn't it be nice if one could be seen from the Earth again and putting on a spectacular show? Now, in 1987, one was visible down in New Zealand. We couldn't see it here in North America, unfortunately. It wasn't in our galaxy. It was in the nearby Magellanic Cloud. We told you last month about how the planet Saturn was going to appear right in front of the Crab Nebula, the remains of the great supernova of the year 1054. Well, article datelined January 7th, Seattle. Exploding star may put on a show. Stellar eruptions pose no threat to Earth, say astronomers. A rare hypergiant star visible to the naked eye from Earth erupted explosively and may do so again at any time, an event that might be visible to backyard astronomers, a team of researchers said. Now, this is a star called Rho Cassiopeia, which actually, if you get a star chart, you can go out and find with fair ease. Reading this article, I was stunned to realize that this star is at, you know, a magnitude 4.5. Not terribly bright, but part of the constellation Cassiopeia. But what's curious is that although it's a reasonably bright star, it's located 10,000 light years away. That is basically one-tenth the distance, the breadth of the galaxy away from us, and it's still visible, which means it is one furnace of a star. It shines 500,000 times more brightly than our sun. There's only about a dozen such hypergiants known in the Milky Way galaxy. It's apparently irping and erupting and spewing out bits of material, briefly brightening, which was actually visible by several amateur astronomers looking at it through a telescope. Rho Cassiopeia is destined to die in a final colossal supernova explosion. It could happen 10,000 years from now. It could happen tomorrow, but it is doing some interesting things, and we'll have to see what happens. Now, Asimov wrote an essay on this back in the 60s that was, he wrote several interesting essays about, you know, how bright different stars are. He asked the question, this is before we'd even gone to the moon, of what if an astronaut were to travel throughout the galaxy and wanted to look back and see our star, the sun, old Sol? How far away could he still do that? Well, doing a little bit of simple math, Asimov showed that, well, once you get about 60 light years away, you pretty much lost sight. You would lose sight to the naked eye observer of our sun. Now, compare that to this star, Rho Cassiopeia, which is 10,000 light years away and yet still visible. Now, one nice thing about Cassiopeia, it's part of the circumpolar constellations. It's always visible from Sacramento, from North America. So if this thing blows, we're going to have a ringside seat. All right, other science technology story. The Chinese Taikonauts are planning to hit space this year, 2003. With power and prestige in mind, Beijing has been working on a flight for 10 years to put men into space. So far, two nations have managed to do so, the United States and the old Soviet Union. China, as a matter of national pride, would like to be the third. And they're making some noise about how they might go to the moon or to Mars. Interesting story. We'll be following that one with you. Well, let's go from science and technology to politics. We recorded an interview that we wanted to play for you last month, but we had to get it cleared with some of our legal advisors, Steve Alexander and Stuart Gardner. But we think it's been vetted and cleared for your listening pleasure. So let's go ahead now with an interview we recorded last month with former President Bill Clinton. President Clinton.
Yeah.
May I call you that, sir?
Well, actually, the term president's supposed to be reserved for the man who won the last election.
So I guess that title rightfully belongs to Al Gore alone.
No argument from me.
Is it poetic justice for you that after Gore was part of your administration, he declined to have you campaign?
Well, Al kept saying my actions were unconscionable and gave me the stiff arm. Now, what I did was wrong, but those Republicans were just trying to alienate Al with that impeachment bullcrap. Pardon my French.
Pardon accepted.
Well, anyway, you think they were really going to make Gore the incumbent?
I don't suppose they were.
No way. It was a bluff. It was PR to sucker Albert into giving me the bum's rush. And it worked, too.
Well, if you'd carried any state for him, Florida would have been irrelevant.
Well, the GOP ain't stupid. You know, what did the Republicans spend? $40 million of your tax dollars to find out I'm a sinner? Hell, I could have told them that.
Well, we agree for the record that a regrettable dalliance was not what the Founding Fathers probably had in mind for a high crime requiring impeachment.
Well, once again, no argument from me.
Have you now mended fences with the Gores?
Well, Tipper didn't send me a Christmas card.
Well, that's too bad.
You know, and my Filipino maid, Esperanza, used to love those pictures of the kittens playing with the yarn ball under the Christmas tree, but we got together after New Year's and had a good old time.
Well, that's nice to hear.
By the way, I enjoyed my trip to Davis. It was a lovely campus, and that Mondavi Center is a beautiful donation.
You know, actually, the Mondavis haven't turned over any money. UCD apparently borrowed the funds, and then when he passes away, the university gets paid back, or at least so I understand.
No kidding. Private deficit spending? I didn't realize a private citizen can pull off a stunt like that.
Well, evidently they can.
I like it. I need to explore just that sort of thing for the new Clinton Library. Build now, pay later.
Where will that go, by the way? Little Rock?
Well, I'm thinking more like Vegas.
Las Vegas.
It's a lot more swinging, Doug. I mean, folks could visit my library while strolling the strip with the kids.
Family values, eh?
Yeah. I'm planning great educational exhibits and a wax museum. It'll be fabulous.
A wax museum?
You bet. I even got people from Madame Tussauds.
Well, they're the best.
Did you know they use real human hair in all the wigs?
I've heard that.
Well, it's true. It doesn't look right if they don't. It costs a heck of a lot, but it's worth it. And wait till you see the gift shop.
Well, what are you going to sell?
Oh, man, we got a bunch of bobbleheads. The kids will love it. Me, Hillary, Al, Tipper, Dick Gephardt, Warren Beatty, and, of course, a bunch of Big D Democratic souvenirs, too.
Such as?
Well, we got Real Plains Georgia Dry Roasted Peanuts from Jimmy Carter's Private Reserve, refrigerator magnets saying the buck stops here like old Harry Truman, and a belt buckle shaped like Texas to honor LBJ.
What about JFK?
I'm especially fond of him. You know, I shook his hand as a teen, you know. Well, I'm going to sell Profiles and Courage vitamin E capsules. I got to tell you, I just don't know where that guy had the vim and vigor to accomplish what he did.
Meaning, of course, the pursuit of the new frontier.
And a few other things. He's really my hero. And he always got away with his private lobbying. I don't know how he did it.
Any Lincoln bedroom souvenirs?
No, but I'm sure the Ted Kennedy shot glass set's going to be a popular item. And then there's the Andy Jackson Old Hickory Smoke flavored barbecue sauce. Mmm! Gets me hungry just saying that.
Well, our reporter told us that your surprise visit to Freeborn Hall was a hit with students since so few of them got into the Mondavi Center.
Well, I thought it'd be nice to press the flesh a little bit.
So to speak.
No jokes, Douglas. Anyway, I heard them all by now. You won't be original. I heard your reporter compared me to James Brown.
He did say that you're both performers who love public appearances.
I'll take that as a huge compliment. I love James. Papa got a brand new bag. That was a campaign theme song back in 92.
It was?
Well, not exactly, but I did play it on the bus if my energy dropped. Always gave me a boost. I just love the off-kilter tempo, the way the sax sails in. It's crazy, man, but it works.
Well, we know your time is tight. We mustn't keep you from weightier matters.
You know, I really enjoy your public affairs programs on 90.3. I listen on the web at kdvs.org, too.
You do?
I sure do. Your program director, what's her name, Gina?
Yeah, Gina.
She asked me to say that. You know, and I'm more than happy to oblige.
Well, will you do a promo for us?
Love to. Just give me a call. I got lots of free time now. Me and Al both. Though they haven't asked me to do Saturday Night Live yet. Did you see Al on the show?
I did.
Well, what'd you think?
Well, I think it ended his run in 04.
Oh, that's a little harsh. I thought he was pretty good. And I think I could do some funny bits. I mean, can't you see me doing those two wild and crazy guys with Dan Aykroyd?
Well, I'm not so sure, but former President Bill Clinton, please come again.
Well, next time I visit UC Davis, you think it's okay to visit that MTV sorority?
I don't know why not.
You know, a couple of those gals said that they had an interest in public service, and I know I can help with that goal.
Maybe I do know why not, but we'll see what we can do.
Oh, I appreciate it. And one last thing, what are the residency requirements for public office out there in California? Can I just use a hotel room like George Bush Sr.?
Well, I'm not sure, but are you thinking of squaring off against Schwarzenegger in 2006?
Well, he's too good to be true, frankly, but I'm just floating the idea.
Well, we're happy to run it up the flagpole and see who salutes.
Right. That's what I used to do.
Well, we certainly hope that that our former president can return to the program in the future. I got a feeling that he will. I just have a good feeling about that. You know, people ask us a lot of times, you know, are those celebrity interviews you do real? And to that I say, you know, not being under oath, absolutely, yes. And we certainly wish President Clinton well with his library in Vegas. All right. Now, if you've been reading the News and Review and the Sacramento Bee lately, and I hope you have, you noticed that there was an article there on Mondavi Center Productions. Jeff Hudson wrote an article for the theater section of the News and Review. Most interesting story never told. The behind-the-scenes spat when the Mondavi Center booked Broadway-style shows like Rent. You didn't need a crystal ball, Jeff said, to figure out that the folks at the Broadway series, previously the sole presenters of touring Broadway shows in this market, were not amused. Rumor has it that Mayor Heather Fargo got involved. The upshot? Both sides are making nice, but you probably won't see many Broadway shows at the Mondavi Center next year. Article from the Bee. Large sewer pipe project opposed. Sacramento's sewer builders have recommended against sizing a new pipeline large enough to handle vast new development in North Natomas and Placer County, deflecting criticism that they were encouraging sprawl. Now, I'm not sure where this exactly stands. There's a plan afoot to run a gigantic sewer pipe under the American River and through downtown. Now, if you've been to the Third World and seen what happens when you run sewer pipes next to the water that you use for drinking, you'd probably think it wasn't such a smart idea, and that giving the green light to more sprawl out in the Natomas area may not be such a good plan. But again, this involves the mayor and the city government. The third thing I would direct your attention to was the Sacramento News and Review issue on January 9th with Joe Miano on the cover. Joe Miano keeping a vigil over the increasing traffic crisis in Sacramento, article by Jeff Kearns. Now, Joe Miano used to fly out of Natomas Airport. The article mentions he now flies out of Rio Linda Airport. Well, what's it got to do with the mayor? Well, I think perhaps everything. The mayor basically double-crossed Natomas Airport when she was running a couple years back. The mayor, like all other candidates, of course, has to amass these days vast, gigantic war chests to the tune of like $1 million, perhaps, to run. And that her friends, the developers of Natomas, wanted to close that little airport that had been serving our community for the past 40 years. These weasel developers didn't like the aircraft flying near their strip malls. Well, guess what? Guess who carried the day on this one? Now, the mayor's been in the news recently over winning full-time mayor status in the November 5th ballot. She now gets to be a full-time peddler of her favors instead of just part-time for $46,000 a year. On election night, I saw reporters observing to the supposed embarrassment of, you know, Sacramento, the big city, that when lobbyists would come to call, they'd be told they had to go see the mayor at her real job. Well, Mayor Fargo's now managed to shove aside the other donkeys at the public trough to appoint a compensation committee to decide how much loot she'll be entitled to from the public till as she continues to direct planning for the benefit of her friends, the developers. I'm sorry to say Heather is an alumnus of UCD. I don't think that everybody that comes out of the school is somebody we perhaps can be proud of. And if she thinks I'm being very unfair, we'd let her come on the show and tell her story. I'd like to know how it is she can explain her double cross performed out at the Natomas Airport for the sake of assisting her pals. Sorry about getting kind of worked up over this. It just makes me so mad when I see, you know, this supposed green mayor, and you see out what is happening out in Natomas. Go out and take a look if you don't believe me and see, what a fine job we're doing of controlling sprawl out in the Natomas area. All right, stay tuned for Dr. Tony Held returning to us in segment number two. You're listening to Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3 FM.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, little boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.